Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here, Dana Osman, here with my friend Chavruta Ann Gordon. Our daf today, Masechta Bava Metzia, daf Lamed Aleph, page 31. Well, the middle of the daf starts to discuss the clause of the Mishnah that says, Hechzira Ubachra, Hechzira Ubachra, which basically taught that a case where somebody returned a lost animal and then the animal runs away again, you have to go back and return it. And even if it runs away again, the point being that no matter how many times this animal sort of escapes, you have to return it each time. And the reason for this is they quote the pasuk from Devarim, chapter 22, verse 1, that says, Hashav Tishavim, that you shall return. And it is using this compound verb, right? Hashav Tishavim. So this basically teaches us that you need to return the animal, a lost animal, multiple times. So the Gemara here basically says, Amar le hahu midurabanan l'rava, ema hashev chadas mina, tishavim treiz mine. Right? So one of the rabbis says to Rava, okay, so say hashev, the first verb, means that you have to return the animal once, and tishavim means you have to return it a second time. But after that, once you've returned the animal twice, you don't need to return it anymore. Amar le, so Rava says to him, hashev afilu mea pami mashma. Hashev teaches us that you would have to return that animal even 100 times. Tishivim, and tishivim, why do we need that? Ein li ela leveto. That teaches us that you have to return the animal to the owner's house. Leginato lechorbato minayin. How do I learn that you cannot, that you can return the animal to his garden or to his, lechorbato is like a building that's in ruins, like a korban, minayin. How do I know that? Talmud lamar, tishavim, tishavim, which teaches us in this word that in any case, mikol makom, that no matter wherever somebody returns a lost animal, you have basically fulfilled the mitzvah of returning the animal. Hechidami, right? What's the case? E, deminatra. All right, let's say if you have a protected area, prashita, of course that would mean that you fulfilled. In other words, if you take it to his enclosed garden or field, okay, of course that means you returned it to his home. E de la minatra amai. But the question becomes, right, if it isn't protected, then why is it considered that you returned the lost animal? So what he's trying to say is that tishave means it doesn't have to just be the house. It could be that you return it to any area that is under ownership of the owner. And then the Gemara is making a distinction between if that area is protected, meaning a field that has a fence around it, versus a field that doesn't have a fence around it. Well, if you return it there, it's just going to run away again. So the Gemara concludes, li'olam d'minatra, right? So the case is where the property is protected, v'hakamash malam, and it teaches us what? D'la ba'inan dad ba'alim. You don't require the owner's knowledge that the item that the animal was returned to him, or the or whatever lost item was returned to him. Kid Rabbi Elazar de Amar, and this is according to the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, Hakol Tzrichin Dad Ba'alin. Every instance, right, of returning an item to an owner, chutz meha, right? So we're talking about like if somebody borrowed something or somebody stole something, you need, the owner needs to know that you're returning it, right? You can't just have stolen something and you want to give it back and just, you know, sort of leave it without the owner knowing. And then the owner says, oh, this returned, you know, the thief has to tell the owner that you returned it. If you were watching something for someone, when you return it, the owner needs to know. Chutz me hashavat aveda, except for returning a lost item. Shehato ripta hashavot arbe, because there's multiple forms of returning it. And how do we know there's multiple forms of returning it? Using this compound verb of hashev tishavim. And that's how we know that you don't need to, the owner doesn't actually need to know that the item is returned. So that's kind of interesting. So in other words, if you find, you know, a book that belongs to somebody, you kind of just, you could leave it on their doorstep, right? Assuming it's protected, you could leave it on their doorstep and you don't, they don't even need to know that you ever returned it. I kind of like this idea because I think it shows that there's something that's supposed to just be altruistic. Like it's almost like you don't need to get the credit for doing it. Now, I think, you know, because once it's in the owner's protected area, presumably it's not going to get lost again. So I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, But I'm curious if that's kind of like the motivation. Like, in a way, it's so selfless. Like, you're not going to get a reward. Nobody's going to acknowledge. Nobody's going to know. I understand that, you know, that that's why maybe Hashavas Aveda is a little bit different than some of, you know, whereas if you borrow something, of course, you need to let the owner know that you actually returned it. From here, and Anne, I'm going to let you take over. There follows, because I know you're going to read part of this, there follows a very interesting discussion about the use of compound verbs, right? Like, and they cite many different examples from the Torah of where they have this type of compound verb. And what do we learn from those types of compound verbs? But I wanted to at least read the part that's relevant to our topic of returning a lost item and to think a little bit about the idea that the owner doesn't need to know when it is actually returned. You can return it. Again, the question is it the dad of the owner, which is definitely the emphasis of how the, you know, the knowledge of the owner, which is how the text is reading. But I'm shifting it a little bit and thinking about that it's the, you know, that the returnee, the person who's returning lost item, actually can stay anonymous.
I actually like that this is a point, right, that you don't have to make yourself known, that you could be anonymous about it. There's something very pleasing to me about that, that the point of returning the lost item is for the item to be returned. And for all that it's a kindness, it's not about, you know, garnering the credit for the one to have, you know, for having done so. Now, that doesn't mean you have to keep your identity private, you know, so I think it kind of opens up the possibility that you could return something without having it become about you. I can think of all kinds of situations where we wouldn't want to have to reveal our identities. We might be, that might be a deterrent to returning something. And then in other circumstances, people for sure would want the credit. So, you know, I can see it going both ways, and I like that the halacha allows for it to go both ways. Okay, let's talk about these compound verbs, which show up so often in the Torah, and so often we just say, oh, it's for emphasis, or sometimes we see that Chazal really derive more other halachot from the doubling, right? So here, shalech tishalach, right? That if you're going to, shalech tishalach, we're talking specifically about when you send away. What are you sending away? You're sending away the mother bird. You could take the eggs, right? And the question is, you know, again, you could do that. You have this obligation to do it twice, send away the mother bird twice. But again, the doubling there means that there's a lot of scope for interpretation by various, you know, points of Chazal, Midrash, the Gemara here, the Halacha, etc. We're going to talk about the mitzvah of rebuke. And I'm jumping to each of the terms, right, rather than reading every word inside for the sake of, I think, just to show, like, this is so much what's going on. Hocheach tochiach, right, that you should give rebuke. What does it mean to give rebuke? The idea being that, you know, if somebody is needing your rebuke, then you have an obligation to rebuke, you know, twice even, right? Meaning the double language there teaches twice, or sometimes it teaches a number of times, right? Because Rava says, and I'll read a little bit inside here. Now, I'm still on Amud Aleph. Amalei hocheach afilu mea pamim. That you should rebuke somebody even 100 times, and then tochiach, but tochiach, where it says hocheach, tochiach, tochiach teaches ainli ela harav l'talmid, talmid li l'rav minayim, meaning the idea that a teacher is going to rebuke a student, that might be up to 100 times, right? But there's no obligation, or the question is, where would there be an obligation for a student to rebuke a teacher? And so then the Gemara comes back to say, hochiach tochiach, that one is obligated to rebuke another, anybody, right, in the case that warrants rebuke, which allows you to understand that a student could also rebuke a teacher. The Gemara goes on, azov ta azov imo. This is, if you see the donkey, and he's so overburdened that it's going to collapse from it, azov tazov, you should release him. What does it mean you should release him in this doubling of language? So again, maybe you have to, you know, unload, reduce the burden on the animal more than once. Hashev tashiv. Now we're talking about, it's really, I will note that some of these are these really violent, you know, disturbing doubling of the violence, of the act of harm. And then others are really nice, right? Hashev tashiv, you should restore somebody's what they need. Hashev tashiv, ein li ela she mishkano bereshut beitin. What happens when you have a poor person whose items are taken up as collateral by somebody who lent him money, right? So now he can't get his stuff. And let's say the stuff that he is now has now been collected from him includes, let's say, his blanket in the winter, right? And that's going to be a difficult situation. So the Gemara, well, really, the Torah first says, Hashiv Tashiv, you should return him that thing that is the collateral against the loan when the sun goes down. Meaning maybe he needs that winter blanket or winter coat or whatever it is, and he needs that under these circumstances. You'll get it back in the morning as collateral, but you don't, the Torah makes sure that he's not left bereft under this, under these times when he most needs it. And again, Hashiv Tashiv, that, you know, he has to return that item at those times, even at a time when the court didn't order him to do so. That there's a double of language, that he has to return it and also return it. Chavol tachbol, right? If you take a collateral, then again, you're still, this is the same idea that you're going to restore it when the sun sets so that he could use it, right? And then the Gemara says, Vahani trei krai lameli. This is why, this case of chavol tachbol, and also Hashiv Tashiv, right? Why do I need both of them to teach the same halacha, right? Shouldn't, isn't one enough? Chad l'schut yom, v'chad l'chsut laila. So one teaches you about the garment that is needed during the day, and one teaches you about the garment that's needed in the night. Meaning the Torah is going out of its way to use, to like to give the verses and also the doubling of language to make these points all the stronger. Naton titain, the mitzvah of giving charity, right? It says you should give and give, right? Again, Deuteronomy chapter 15, right? The idea being that you give charitable gifts when, you know, under all the circumstances when you should, and it doesn't matter if you're giving a large gift or a small gift, but the point is that you, the giver, need to be giving. Hanek ta'anik, when an Eved Ivri is released, it says, you will, Hanek ta'anik, you will give him from your flock so that he can carry on his way, right? And again, it's got this doubling of language to teach that you have to give him these gifts no matter what, right? Regardless of whether you benefited in your own flocks because of him or not. Veit ta'abtenu. No, is that right? Yeah, ta'avtenu. So now we're talking about, again, when you're lending to the poor, and it's like you should open your hand, you should lend, and you should also be lending. And what does that mean? It's enjoining people who have the funds, who have sufficient means to be able to lend to others, to actually go ahead and do so. Maybe you would not want to, but the verse gives you the double emphasis to teach that you must, you know, again, it's more than just emphasis, right? It functions in some ways, emphasis, to make sure that this mitzvah is carried out. But the idea of it is, you know, what happens if somebody says, like, I don't want your stuff, right? Yesh lo ve'eno rotzeh lihitparnes minayin, tamud lomar tavtenu mikol makom. You still have to provide for him, even if he doesn't want to take from you. Okay. I'm going to stop here. Just what I think is particularly useful about this daf with regard to these doubling of language, and just brings case after case, is that it reminds us that when the Torah does this, there's a rationale that's going to be used by the halachic authorities to say it's not just a matter of, you know, really make sure that you do it. Sometimes that is what happens, right? The outcome is that really you should make sure that you do it. But the reason that you really make sure that you should do it is that each case gives the doubling as a reason to, like, you might have thought you don't have to under these other circumstances, but therefore you still really do need to. So that the Gemara is then providing the excuse or the rationale for making sure that whatever this double language, just as a single verb, would have done to make sure that it's really taken care of, both for the positive and the negative. As we see, some of these cases are about generosity, and some of them are about death sentences. And the Torah, in all of these cases, is making sure that it's kind of like the Torah is giving its own emphasis on its mitzvah, right? Like, here's a mitzvah, and also make sure that you fulfill it under other circumstances when the halacha would require that you fulfill it. Mitzvah, and also do the mitzvah. The doubling is there. And then, mot yumat hamakeh. The Gemara gives another compound, right, where we have the verb twice, where you say that if there's a fight between two people and one person strikes the other in the way that he dies, mot yumat, right, he dies in that which struck him, right, makes him die. And so then the question is, why this doubling here? And again, the question is, you know, you clearly can't do this twice, right? Meaning if he's being put to death, then he's only being put to death just the once. So, Eli Ella b'mita haktubabo. There's only one written death. Minayin she'im iyata yachol lahamito b'mita haktubabo sh'ata rashay lahamito b'chol mita sh'ata yachol lahamito. Talmud lomar, mot yumat mikol makom. So the Gemara explains, right, that we only have this case of where, you know, one is put to death by whichever form of death is meted out as a sentence, right? But what if you couldn't execute him properly, meaning as a death sentence? And that's not a fight between two people. It's in the case of where someone is getting put to death. And then what do you do? Mot yumat, then you can execute him in any case, meaning in various other ways of doing so, not just in the specific designated halachic principle. There, right, there's four different deaths that the Beit Din can mete out, and each one is only applicable in certain cases. Not every death sentence is carried out in the same way. The next case is talking about...